Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, acclaimed director, producer, and writer, Damian Lichtenstein.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Toby Lightman. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I'm asked a lot of times before the shows when I speak with so many of our guests, actually all of them, our guests and our performance guests, and I get to speak with them, and we've always had such great conversations, and so many people say, oh, I wish we would have recorded that, or that would have been the interview. I have to say that very rarely have I experienced a pre-show call that I got the sense that if I said hello and the cameras were rolling, that the person on the other line would say the same things or say them in the same way, or that we would get the same conscious conversation that we had, and we would go to the depths of which we then bring into the show if the cameras, so to speak, were rolling as soon as I said hello. And I'd like to get to that point, and I think that's a special place, and I feel like we're the Life Changes Show is either going to get there or we might be already there. Like, for the first time, talking to our interview guest and our performance guest, I felt in our pre-show conversations like if the cameras were rolling, this would be the conversation we would have exactly like this. And there was a consciousness that I thoroughly enjoyed. And it could be where I am. It could be where the show is. It could be where the world is. It could be where our guests have been and who they've become or where they are now. And sadly, as I reflected on it, I have to say, sadly, because I didn't have words to describe it. As a matter of fact, I just went on for 2 minutes describing. But there isn't a phrase that I know of. There isn't an idiom that we have. We have shoot from the hip, which, according to Cambridge Dictionary, says speaking in a very direct and honest way, which is great. At the same time, it also says to react quickly without thinking carefully. And so there's that. So it's not that. And I could say, well, they were speaking from the heart, or they came from the heart, or they were being in their heart, which is good because it's, according to Cambridge Dictionary again, is sincere, and it's a speaking from the heart, like a little love in there and all that, which is great. Yet it doesn't reflect wisdom per se, and it doesn't reflect, in my opinion, consciousness. And I want deeper. And there's, of course, speaking your mind, and that's supposedly a good thing, where we say that somebody that speaks their mind speaks directly. They're certainly not afraid to say certain things, but that doesn't always mean that it's also connected to the heart, and it certainly doesn't necessarily encompass consciously. I feel like you're going to hear that today. That's what I felt when I had the conversations. That's where I was. That's where I want to go. I hope you'll feel it too.
I feel it already. This is going to be such a powerful show. I already feel it. But there's an interesting thread that goes through this friendship and the opportunity to bring both guests on. But we were introduced to Damian through his sister, Cheyenne Joy,
yes,
after she was a guest many years back for Discover the Gift.
Yes.
And after that show, she said, you have to meet my brother. Mm. And that was the beginning of a friendship. And then the last few years, we kind of parted ways and went about our life and our life changes. And the fires in Malibu brought us back together. and started to unfold this. And there's so much here. He brings so much wisdom and has so much to offer. And the timing is amazing for this conversation. And we're so grateful to Dina Fanai for introducing Toby and her on the heels of the launch of her new song. This is just fantastic.
And interesting, Mark, that you mentioned the fires. And of course, I didn't know the whole story. And of course, I don't know the whole story. And does anyone ever know? But the different fires that people go through, then that's what I said in the monologue, that kind of the things that our guests have been through that have made them who they are.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was a friend of mine that kind of started to break down the idea of, were you impacted by the fires, by starting to suggest that everybody ultimately was impacted by the fires, some more directly, like we'll hear tonight, but ultimately it's culture shifting and community and the ripples throughout. So,
and what fires, because in our lives, so many different experiences.
Fires, quotes in the air. Right. Yeah, I guess our listeners can't see those air quotes.
Okay, so with that, I am delighted to share that our show title is a combination of three different things, actually, that our guests shared during that pre-show. And it's called Now is the Moment to Unleash the Story Within. This is episode 846, and we have the honor of having an interview guest who is an acclaimed director. He's a producer. He's a writer. He's a member of the Directors Guild of America, GDA. He's co-founder of the Directors Guild Leadership Council. He's an entrepreneur. He's a father. He's Damian Lichtenstein. Welcome, Damian, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
I was so taken. Actually, I laughed. I cried. I thought, I felt when we talked, and we were just having a conversation. I mean, talk about storytelling. And knowing now you in just a little bit, it makes sense that you're a movie maker, you're a business maker, you're a inspire people maker. Where did this consciousness start for you? You started as a kid wanting to make movies, no? Or in the entertainment business, right?
It's true. I did start early in the entertainment business, but in where it started is with my parents, who were both extraordinary artists. My mother, unfortunately, passed very young. She was 38 when she died, on the heels of my first major fire. My father, God bless him, in his mid-80s, is more prolific with his art today than maybe at any time in history. There was an image of me, which I wish I had, that burned away in that first fire, but I was a baby, a toddler, and I had climbed on top of a fresh gessoed canvas. That is when you coat a canvas with white paint prior to, you know, creating whatever painting or piece of art is going to be created. And I climbed onto it and in my diaper, and I grabbed brushes, and it was the canvas was still wet. And I started dipping them into various paints and inks and painting all around me. And so this this image that comes to my mind was evoked in a very, you know, incredibly deep and powerful conversation with my mom, which I'll get to in a moment. But this was like my first experience of the frame, the frame. And when I say frame, it's, you can use this in many, many ways, but it's everybody all day long is looking at a frame. You pick up your phone and you scroll, you're scrolling through frames of images and sound. You take a picture, you've just created something within a frame. How you frame your life, you know, the frame in which you live your life is very, very powerful. And, you know, the simple way to say that, you know, is that if the frame I have in life is, you know, my life sucks and nothing ever goes right for me, well, guess what's going to get filled into that frame, because you are a conscious creator. You may not be aware that you're at play with the universe and God, but you are. And as you, you know, I love the word abracadabra, because its literal translation is I create as I speak. So as you're speaking, you're creating, and you're creating inside a frame that you generate on a daily basis. And it's our, my frames, by the way, aren't always good. Sometimes they suck. Sometimes my frames are beautiful. And even in business, we often talk about, you know, creating and holding the frame when you enter into any business conversation. So this power of the frame was instilled into me at a very early age. And I want to recount one moment in my life.
Please.
So I was born in New York City, and I grew up back and forth between the streets of New York and the mountains of Vermont, like, you know, as polar opposite practically as you can get. And my father, my mother divorced when I was young. He was a very prolific artist and one of the founding artists of the Soho art community. And my mother was ultimately a president of the Vermont Council on the Arts and very engaged in all of that. My mom, you know, and I took a walk one day, and we left our house on top of Temple Hill in Sharon, Vermont. And we were walking up an old logging road. And if you can imagine that forest of pines where the old dirt road is covered with pine needles, and you can hear the crunch of the pine needles under your feet. You can smell the air and the pine scent. Sun is dappling through all of the trees, and portions of light are everywhere. And you kind of come out of this magical tunnel, and we're sitting on top of a mountain. Or a large hill called Temple Hill. And the reason we're up there is my mom has brought her photography kit with her, and I'm about 8 years old, and it is my first real lesson in photography. Again, the frame. And you know, she gave me some instruction prior to, and so she said, okay, let's load the camera. And this is an old, you know, 35 millimeter film. Doesn't really exist that much today, but, and you had light meters and lenses, and she's like, you know, pick a lens and, you know, set your light meter and set your f-stop and let's take your first photo. And so I remember distinctly, even though I was a child, I picked an 85 millimeter lens, a portrait lens, kind of compresses things. It makes them closer together. And I looked through the lens at this frame, and I saw the old, maybe 200-year-old rock wall with moss all over it that was crumbling. I saw the wild apple trees and some deer down in, you know, the meadow eating them. I could see across the valley to a farm and little tiny cows eating in the fields and the big puffy clouds and the flowers and the birds chirping. And I just kept looking. And then I put the camera down without having taken a single shot. And my mom said, and I had a frown on my face, and she said, "What's wrong?" I said, I don't know which picture to take. I'm afraid I'll take the wrong one.
Wow.
And she looked at me. It's a beautiful moment. She had a tear in her eye, and she said, "Oh, okay, son, I'm going to tell you something that I want you to remember for the rest of your life." And I've remembered it for my entire life. She said, "It's just as important what you leave out of your frame as what you put in it." And the sun kind of broke through the clouds, and I turned, I don't know why I'm so emotional, but I turned, and my first shot was my mother. Her face turned up to the clouds, smiling, you know, So my parents were my greatest teachers in the world of art, creation, consistency, never stopping, never stopping. And and I have other, one of my most powerful life lessons from my father as well, but it's a longer story, so I'll hold it for another time. But they inspired me into the act of creation, and my mom gave me my first movie camera because I kept blowing up my plastic models, and she wanted to protect my eyes. So
Oh.
she's like, "You can stand 20 feet away, and this is called a zoom lens." And I had a Super 8 Bell and Howell. And I must have watched that first movie I made 100 times, and and cut to a year later, I've got like every farm kid and local boy, and we've got B-17s on zip line wires filled with cotton balls and lighter fluid on fire, and we're pushing tanks with sticks over berms. And this is when I learned that you can actually take one shot at a time rather than trying to get it all in one. But by the time I was 10, I was fully immersed as a filmmaker. And I was already performing off Broadway in New York at the age of 9. So I'd see my father in the summers and do summer stock theater in New York and be back home. And then, when that big fire hit in my life in Vermont, when, that beautiful home I'd grown up building and creating and burnt to the ground. And a couple of weeks later, my mother got killed in a car accident, and my entire life was turned upside down. It's
No, I don't know. I don't think anybody could know.
yeah, it has its deep emotional impact and resonance, but at the same time, my, especially my mother, Fonda Joy, like you said, my sister Cheyenne Joy, and her daughter Maya Joy. She had once said to me, she's like, "Look, kid, one day I'm not going to be around, and one day you'll probably put me in the ground. And on that day, instead of, spending your life crying, I want you to dance for me."
Well,
So I didn't expect to come on your show and bawl like a baby, sorry. But
nothing to be sorry about.
the profound nature of creation, of choosing to spend your life in the act of creation. A lot of people spend their life in the act of destruction.
Oh,
And
whoa.
it's very different to spend your life in the act of creation. And, often, I won't get into this subject right now, but often if we look out in the world, we see that creators are crucified. They're taken down. They're pulled down. It's kind of like, the crab theory. Like if you ever, I used to walk around Chinatown in New York City, and you go by the fish markets, and there'd be giant buckets of blue crabs, and there'd always be a couple crabs trying to climb out, but the other crabs would reach up and grab the crab that was trying to climb out and pull it back
No.
down.
What's
This
the
is a,
theory behind that?
that's the crab theory, right? Which you don't get to get out. You stay in here with us. So,
No.
yep, it's a legit thing.
Whoa. Wow. I did not know that.
Which is similar to the flea experiment, which many people in transformative work know. But if you take, fleas can jump on average 100 times their body length at minimum, right? But if you take a bunch of fleas and you put them in a glass jar and you put a cover, a lid on the jar, and you leave them there for a couple hours, they will repeatedly jump and slam their little flea heads into that jar top. And eventually, the top of that jar becomes the extent of their paradigm, meaning even though they're capable of jumping 10 times higher than the lid of that jar, once you take the top off that jar, 9 out of 10 of the fleas will never jump out of that jar again and will die inside that jar. One, on rare occasions two, will jump out. You know, so that's what we do to ourselves as human beings, is that life happens, and sometimes life is harsh and painful and destructive, and it hurts. And sometimes we have to battle through things that are, you know, we don't think that we have the strength to get through. But if we continue going, we do. But a lot of the times what happens is that we impose a lid on our own experience, on our own self-expression, on the depth to which we have the capacity to create, the depth in which we have the capacity to connect to God, the depth in which we have the capacity to actually live and fulfill on our dreams, the lack of a better term, the God-given reason that we incarnated here in this form and this, you know, planet and this part of the universe. Like, but we cover it with a lid, and we suppress ourselves from the full potential. You know, most of us, even those that are out there pushing hard, you know, maybe we're operating at 30 or 40% of our capacity. And most people are in that jar operating at 10% of what they're capable of, separate from, you know, the brain science behind it. So, you know, what I do is consistently, no matter how hard I've been knocked down or how hard I get hit, is I choose, as an act of choice, to create again. So, and what that looks like in very real terms is, you know, we came back from winter break, my wife and my two amazing young sons, they're 8 and 10. They wanted to see Disney World. So we took them to all the parks. You know, by the way, if you want to know how to torture a parent, you just go visit 5 parks in over the course of 5 days. And it's slightly the definition of torture. I figured out that I don't drink, but every 50 feet beer stand. And I was like, oh, that's for the dads, right? In the occasion of the moms. So this is how you get through it. But regardless, we came back. It was still a fun trip. And, you know, the kids were lit up. And we got back literally 1 a.m. Sunday morning. So Saturday, you know, we arrived Saturday night at the airport. By the time we were home in the Palisades in Los Angeles, it was Sunday morning. We hadn't even unpacked. We got our stuff together. Kids were starting school on Monday. I walked the kids to school 8 a.m. Monday morning, because we were only like 2.5 blocks from their school. I went down, and my wife wasn't feeling well from all the travel, and she was snuggled up in bed, and I got my gym clothes on and packed my bag and went down to the new Equinox that had just opened in the same building where my office was. And I'm like, just starting my workout, and I was like, does anybody smell smoke? And I walked outside, and I called my wife on the phone, and I said, honey, do you smell or see smoke? She's like, no. I was like, go look outside the front door, please. And she went outside and looked out the front door, and she said, oh my God, there's a giant column of black smoke behind the kids' school. Oh. And I said, get dressed, get to the school, get the kids. Between the time I said that and the time we were in the car and leaving, it was about 20 minutes.
Wow.
Both cars, and the school was already starting to catch on fire.
Wow.
It was one of the first things that burned in the Palisades fires. And overnight, 100-year city was burnt to the ground. Everything. Almost every home, the schools, the churches, the community centers, the restaurants, the mom and pops, like an entire world was gone in the blink of an eye. And there was very little time to think. Like, you, the choices that had to be made, which I referred to as the moment within the moment, which is, in our lives, things happen. There's a moment. And in that moment, you know, we make a choice. You know, some people call it a decision. But, you know, an example is, you know, Mike Tyson had a great quote. He's like, you know, I can't do his voice. You know, he does that. He's got that squeaky voice. But everybody's got a plan till they get hit in the face. You know, so it's like, yeah, we all have a plan until we get hit in the face. And then in that moment that you get hit, whatever in life has hit you, then we, as human beings, you know, my perception and my life and my training and all the things I've been through, it's kind of leaves me in one of three spots. You know, we talk a lot about fight or flight mode, right? We're going to mm-hmm. fight or we're going to flight, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a mode in between and it's called freeze.
Yep.
So people either fight, they freeze, or they flee. These are kind of the three things that happen. And sometimes you want to stay and fight, but the likelihood of you living is slim. Like if I had stayed to fight the fire that consumed our neighborhood and our city and our home and burnt everything to the ground, I would be dead. There was no escaping that inferno, right? When I was able to get us into the cars and out with just, you know, basically the clothes on our back and, you know, a few items. And, cause there's no time. There was no time. You know, I came down to Sunset Boulevard and many people saw the images of all those burnt out cars and later saw the images of the tractors picking up G wagons and Rolls Royces and Mercedes and Porsches and flipping them over the side cause they were burnt out hulls. You know, people who froze in that moment, you know, had to flee for their lives from their burning cars, you know, and make their way down to the ocean. You know, we got out. I punched a hole through that insanity and, you know, and we got out. And it was funny because there was that moment when we were driving away where like the rest of the world didn't know that that world was burning. So it was like, traffic was normal on the PCH and, you know, and I was like, yeah, I need a place to sleep. That's like your first thing. It's like, where am I going to put the children? And, you know, and I got a hotel and which is its own funny story. Later that night, that hotel lobby was filled with about 200 families with their pets and no place to sleep. And I want to give credit where credit's due. He's very quiet about this kind of stuff. You know, and lately in the press, a good friend of mine has been getting, you know, attacked because he's a creator. He's an icon. He's brought untold tens, if not hundreds of millions of people, complete and total joy. And right now he's just being attacked left and right. And that man called me, second person that called me, and said, are you safe? And I said, we're not. And he said, can you get out of the city? I said, I can. And he said, then come to my house. And so I drove up to Santa Barbara, and that man was Kevin Costner, who starred in one of my movies and is a creative genius and a fellow filmmaker and a dear friend. And he put us up for weeks, you know, provided home and a beautiful home and food and shelter. And like my wife literally said, you could not have landed us in a better place on the planet than here, you know, but that wasn't me, you know, something spoke to him. He made the call. So I just, in this moment,
wow,
I want to honor that man who has done so much for so many. And in the act, in the middle of the act of epic creation that he's in right now with his Horizon series, he's just being attacked. The banks are suing him. The studios are suing him. Crew people are suing. It's like, and it's fascinating to me that, you know, that this is a pet peeve of mine, that one of the things that we do is we take the people that are passionate and creative artists and have given so much of themselves, you know, to the world, and then we pick them apart piece by piece and we tear them down, just like the crab pulling the one crab that's trying to climb out of the bucket down.
Wow.
So you know, I honor him. I'm grateful to him, because without that moment, within the moment of being removed from the chaos, I would not have found the strength that I needed to find a new home, which I'm in right now as we speak, in Malibu, you know, to get my children into a new school, to, you know, be able to give my wife the time to process, because everybody, both directly and indirectly impacted by the worst fire disaster in the history of California, we all have PTSD.
Sure.
Every one of us, whether you were directly impacted or indirectly to a certain degree. But the outpouring of love, the outpouring of community, the outpouring of generosity and support and friendship, it's like nothing I've ever seen, to be honest. I got to the point where I got embarrassed to accept any more support or gifts or help. You know, because no, I'm the one that gives. I'm the one that supports. I'm the one that hires. I'm the one that, you know, contributes. I'm the one receive. No, I don't need to receive. I'm fine. No, the truth is, I wasn't fine. And
what was that? Was that ego, or history, or pride, or what was that? That
you couldn't. You know, it's a great question. I'm ego, sure. I think it's part of it. You know. I remember going to a local church in Santa Barbara, because, you know, I had a pair of jeans, some underwear, and a pullover shirt and some shoes. You know, I'd opted to grab things that I knew I'd need, like computers and passports and cash and credit cards and wallets and, you know, that kind of stuff. I had no clothes. And I'm walking through, literally, they had a sign outside that said, "We cannot accept any more contributions."
Wow.
I was like, whoa. And I went inside, and it's just, I mean, tables and tables and tables filled with everything you need, from razors to underwear, like everything you need.
Wow.
And I was gingerly picking a few items up and putting it in my hand. Like, well, I guess I could take a pair of underwear and some socks and a razor would be good. Maybe that t-shirt. Okay. And two women, one was a nun, one wasn't, came over to me with this giant box. And they were like, "Let us help you." And I said, "No, I'm good." Like, that was my response. I'm good. They're like, "No, let us help you." And they filled that box until I couldn't barely carry it, you know, and I'm wearing a pair of those jeans right now.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I want to say that in the midst of deep, profound tragedy and destruction, you know, there was incredible possibility, incredible love, and how people were choosing to frame it, you know, was remarkable, which came inside of, you know, how can I contribute? Of course, you're always going to have the outliers on the bell curve, which is the, you know, the deviance, which is how can I take, right? That's always there, you know. But overall, the experience was how can I contribute, which then leads me here, even in talking right now with you guys. I think my thought process was, how can I contribute?
You're contributing. Indeed. You are contributing greatly. We sat down to have a conversation with, as far as the world knows, a man who has done big movies and big videos and been on the fast pace, dealing with some of the, working with, sitting down with some of the biggest Hollywood actors in the world, Academy Award winners, Grammy winners, heads of states, musicians, spiritual leaders, best-selling authors. And you talk, you bring this, you bring heart, you bring love, you bring compassion, you brought understanding, you brought us to tears, you made us feel. And we want more. We want more. We want to hear the story about your father. We want to hear the story about your grandfather, actually, if you would grace us with those someday.
Yes, my honor to do so again.
Thank you so much. Wow, where am I? I want to let people know that they can learn, well, I think they learned everything they needed to learn, at least about the heart of Damien Lichtenstein. This is a good start. They can find you and more information about you at the Life Changes Show, of course. And you're all over. Actually, can we just share real quickly, because we run out of time, but let's share the video that we have at the Life Changes Show page, which is The Moment. Can you give us a 1 minute information on that?
Sure. So I'm involved with an extraordinary group of men, and they run by, I'll call him our fearless, inspiring coach, Sam Falsalfi, and he runs a down in Southern California, in the OC area, a group called Warrior Week. Warrior Week is about taking good men and making them great. Mm. Primarily focused on, you know, married men with children who are entrepreneurs and who want to make a difference in their community. And those men are put through an intense crucible to discover what really matters. That man, Sam, called me and said, I would like to come up with my team and we would like to film you and your wife because we think we need to capture the moment within the moment. That, you know, in the not too distant future, people will forget the depth of what happened here and the impact of it. And we would like to capture that for a moment in time, and both as a gift to us and a gift to you and your family. So they came and they filmed us and, you know, I've there's a, like, we'll call it an extended trailer, if you will, or clip. They shot, like, I think what would ultimately be an hour's worth of content, but you know, in that edit that I shared with you guys, which is 100% open to share to anyone that wants to see it, was, you know, just the raw truth in the moment. And it was the edit was just, you know, the filmmaker, he just sat down and he said, I cut with my heart, and you know, and that was an extraordinary filmmaker's name is Kyle, and that's just the first cut that he put together, and even though there's bigger and longer extended pieces, I think that it's a standalone piece that, and for me, the and I'll end it here because I know we're out of time. It was later, Sam said, the greatest gift you received from all of this was the acknowledgement of your wife.
Yeah. It's in the video. And people will see it if they go to the link. It definitely speaks to it for itself, and it definitely speaks to you and the relationship that you all have, the recognition and the relationship. The moment Damien has graciously shared that link with us and the password, which you will find on the page for Damien Lichtenstein here on the Life Changes Show. We'll be sharing much more about Damien and his projects coming up as we learn about them ourselves. Damien, we can't thank you enough. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm grateful. Again, I hope I was able to contribute something. I know we talked about so much more on our first call, but I think I said maybe we'll get into your first question.
And we did. Brilliant.
But I'm going to mute myself and stick around to listen to Toby. I'm excited to hear her music.
Thank you again, Damien Lichtenstein. Mark, thank you for bringing Damien, inviting Damien, and bringing so we can bring this conversation to our audience.
So powerful, and just the beginning of so much more to unfold. You know, you've heard me say this a few times in the past that I believe that one day humanity will look back and say that one of our greatest mistakes was allowing us to believe that entertainment and education were two separate worlds. And if we had more people setting the frame with the consciousness and the wisdom and the resilience of Damien, imagine what an effect on the millions and millions of people and children and families that would have.
You know, Mark, you said something also a couple of weeks ago or a month or so ago. It's like, I'd love to have somebody talk about their moment. Like, there are people that talk about their success and how they did it or the past or something, but somebody who's in the moment, talk about that. And this wasn't planned. And we had a whole lot of things that we can talk about that Damien is doing, but he, right from the first moment when he and I connected earlier and now, he just went right towards the moment, and there it is, and that's the name of his video, by the way.
That's why we call them conversations that matter, and you know, getting right to the heart of it is so important, and so honored to have him on today.
Yeah,
and looking forward to more to come.
Boy, did this matter. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Terry, and a friend just told me that the new moon is coming up soon, that we need to celebrate it. I remember that you used to do moon ceremonies, but we have forgotten why you did them and can't remember why the importance of a new moon actually is. Is there a specific ritual that you can recommend for me to do to welcome the new moon?
Dearest Terry, the new moon is a time of new beginnings, intention setting, and planting seeds, both literally and metaphorically. Spiritually and energetically, it symbolizes a blank slate when the moon is invisible in the night sky, and we're invited to go inward, reflect, and realign. The new moon is important because it is a powerful time to set new goals or intentions. With the moon hidden, it's a time to pause, rest, and reconnect with your inner self. The intentions and the thoughts you plant now will grow as the moon waxes. Think of it as the first step in a lunar manifestation cycle. Celebrating the new moon is a good time to release what no longer serves you, to make space for new energy. Indigenous people also often view the new moon as a significant time for reflection and renewal, marking the beginning of a new cycle. Many indigenous cultures, such as the Lakota, incorporate the lunar phrases into their calendars, using the new moon to guide agricultural practices and spiritual ceremonies. You can learn more about these practices at meaningfulmoon.com. There are also many other websites available that share some beautiful rituals. Some of my favorites are mindbodygreen.com, themoonschool.com, ancestralmedicine.org, and whimsysoul.com. Please check out these sites, and I feel you will find the perfect new moon ceremony that will assist you in manifesting your highest and best good. You are a very powerful woman, Terry, and I look forward to hearing from you after you've done your first ceremony, as I feel you will benefit from it very much.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have a classically trained violinist, a guitar player, a singer, a songwriter, Toby Lightman. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, in an increasingly artificial world, I read about you, Toby Lightman's pure and soulful voice cuts through the noise and connects with people emotionally. Well, not just your voice and your lyrics. So let's talk about that. These lyrics, I was taken by them myself.
Well, there's a lot to talk about with lyrics. I think it's hard to just get that one in really quickly. But it took me years to become a writer that felt like I was actually emoting in the way that I wanted to with the right words. I think a lot of people fall into that naturally. A lot of people have to work on it. And I think in the beginning of my career, I was really timid to write words that really meant something. And then when I finally had that first song, that was something that I almost felt like was a diary entry, and I'd never had a diary as a younger adult. And I just felt like this song was the first one. And I'll never forget playing it for my mom and my sister, and they looked at me and said, "Do you really feel that way?" And it showed me that music could really be an entrance into your heart and your soul, and you can really bear a lot with the words. So I've worked really hard to kind of let go of any fear to open up in my music.
You have been working musically for a long time. We're working with the Record Academy. As a matter of fact, congratulations. You are a governor now. Tell us real quickly about that before we go on.
Yeah, so I have been working in music for a long time. I had my record deal in the early 2000s and put out two records on Atlantic Records, and then became independent. The record industry kind of went into a little bit of a shift, being relevant or not relevant, meaning the record labels. And so I started as an independent artist, figuring out my own way, and I had to keep going. You know, you have to just keep going if you're your own musician and your own writer. You know, managers come and go, labels come and go, but you are you. And so I realized there was a place for me in film and TV, and I had a lot of music, thankfully over 100 placements now in different movies and TV shows. And as a songwriter, I'm starting to get into these different roles of advocacy for songwriters. We're not a union, and we're not really allowed to be, so according to government rule, but we don't have to get into that. But I'm really strongly advocating for songwriters and women in music. And I was just elected to the board of the New York chapter of the Recording Academy, which is really exciting.
Congratulations. And may you make a lot of difference there. A good difference, as I know, is in your heart to do. And speaking of your heart, you said a lot of people get there. I don't know that a lot of people get there as far as being able to be true, like you are doing in your lyrics and in your songwriting today. And you, maybe it was in your heart to do it for a long time, but it seems like your heart was ripped open a couple different times. Talk about going through fires until you just put it out there.
Well, I would probably say just I had my record deal when I was young. I was just out of college. I was still getting to know myself as a writer, as an artist, and as a woman. And so writing for me took time, and I found myself in recording studios with a lot of older gentlemen producers that weren't necessarily connecting with the 23-year-old me. And so I found that hard to open up. And as I went on my career, and I toured and I had an amazing experience. I really truly did. But I never fully felt connected in what I was trying to say until I wanted to start a family. And I was having a hard time getting pregnant. I had to go through with fertility, treatment, and really realize that my life had to change. I couldn't tour the way that I was touring. I couldn't travel the way I was traveling. I had to be home. And so I was writing songs about this process and how overwhelmingly lonely it was. And a lot of women weren't really talking too much about it. And if they hadn't gone through it, it was very hard to connect. And so I would write songs about that. And I didn't want to share them with the male producers that I had been working with over the years. And so I sat down and I started to figure out how to produce them myself. And basically, it took me about 4 or 5 years, but I sat down and I went through every kick drum, every bass sound, every guitar strum that I figured out on the electric guitar, the mandolin, anything I could get my hands on. And I produced a whole album on my own. And it was about my vulnerability and going through fertility and thankfully becoming a mother to two boys, just like Damien. But I have a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. And it was definitely a moment where I realized that I could do it on my own. I didn't need to rely on anyone, and then I could be more present for my children and make my own schedule. Unfortunately, I haven't missed a beat, which has been great. I feel like it's really important for other women, especially other female singers and songwriters in the music business, to know that they can find their own voice too. So I really feel strongly about advocating for things like that.
Well, good on you. And interestingly enough, this song was written a few years back, or maybe even many years back, actually. The time for this song seems to be now. And as a matter of fact, the world agrees. What happened? We're going to hear Higher, which actually, this is exciting because you're on with us today. And tomorrow, in just a few hours, the Unleashed video drops for Higher. So it's all so new, and yet it's something that it's been in your heart for a long time. What else has happened with the song in this short period of time?
Well, I wrote this song when I was fishing around as a producer, but I thankfully had my first son. He was 6 months old, and two of my dearest co-writers came to visit me, and we did a writing retreat for a weekend. And I just was really trying to figure out how to get creatively inspired after going through this crazy traumatic experience with loss, and then getting pregnant and worrying, and so I finally had this beautiful little baby to show for it. And my friends came to visit, and we were just talking about, and I had just turned 40, and we said, well, this is going to be hard getting back into the music business at 40 and feeling relevant, and in so many industries, with experience and time, you get more wise and knowledgeable about your craft. But in music, and in so many ways, it focuses a lot on the youth and who's up and coming and who's new and who have you discovered. And but what there's so many other people like myself who've been doing this, and I feel like I'm getting better as I get older, and I'm getting more confident in how I write my words and my songs and produce now my music. And so we wrote this song basically about that. When life is hard and you have these moments of doubt, don't ever forget how good you are and how good you can be and how we continue to become better with every day, with every project. And so I wrote that song with my two dear friends, but I wasn't confident to produce it because I hadn't gone through that process yet. And so I wrote the song with them in 2017. I produced a whole album between now and then. And last year I said, I'm ready. I'm ready to sit down and produce this song. And it is literally the first song that I can honestly say I wouldn't change one bit about
Well,
the song.
Can I tell you that that's one thing, as we were all listening to the song, and I listened to it three times today, and I would have listened to it more had I been able to take the time to do it, because I really connected with it as well. Interestingly enough, Mark says, it's so really well produced, isn't it? Oh, that's interesting. You should say that, because...
Thank you. So we always will take a compliment. Thank you.
We're gonna hear it in a moment, but there is one piece that I was hoping you would share, the American Idol connection.
So because of
you're so
you.
Modest.
Oh, I'm sorry. My friend always yells at me, stop doing the humble. Just say it. So
just say it.
Because of my role in music and film and TV, I have representation. They send my music around and we try to get, you know, an amazingly emotional spots in different films and TV shows. But this odd opportunity came up where American Idol was looking for songs back in the fall, and I had the song already produced, but I hadn't released it yet. And all of the producers on the show and everyone that works with the supervision were really into the song. And I didn't actually know this was happening, because my rep sent it without me knowing. But I released a song in April, and then in May we got a call that they had held on to the song since September, just being so committed to somebody recording it, but they didn't know who the finalist would be. And so in the top three, there was one woman, and her name's Brianna Nix. She didn't actually win the show, but she recorded the song and released it the day before the show, and after the show ended, it went number one, which was kind of amazing. Yeah, so amazing. Now I've had a lot of amazing experiences in my career, but now I can say as a songwriter, I've had a number one single, which
wait,
is
in
really
two
cool.
In two categories, right?
In two three genres? Categories,
three.
Actually. Yeah.
Country?
So that's the power of the song. She made it her own, and she connected with it in her own way. And as another mother, and I'm just really honored and grateful that she was able to give it a big platform like
now
that.
This
show.
Song, good for you. This song is pre-recorded. It is you though singing on this.
This song is me. This is my production. Correct.
Okay.
Hers is much more country leaning. So if you like country, maybe, but I like mine personally better.
Well, I know I like yours. Here is a Toby Lightman's pre-recorded song, the video of which drops tomorrow, the Unleashed video. You can hear her now on the Life Changes show. Higher.
Thank you.
Am I all washed up? Am I what they said? Am I good enough? Is it in my head? Every day I'm older, but so far from over. Trying to make my way, still in this fight. No matter what they say, I'ma get this right. Every day I'm older, so far from over. Odds are stacked against me, tie me to the ground, but I know at the end of the day, when the water is rising, 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 I'm gonna give a damn. Every day I'm older, so far from over. Odds are stacked against me, tie me to the ground, but I know at the end of the day, when the water is rising, I'm gonna rise up higher, higher, where there is a mountain.
nobody going to stop her now. Toby Lightman.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. So people can find you all over the socials, actually, but I think we need to spell your name, T-O-B-Y, and Lightman, just like it sounds, actually, L-I-G-H-T-M-A-N. So Toby Lightman is her website, but she's all over Instagram, TikTok, Spotify, YouTube. You can find her everywhere. We have links for her, including, I think we actually, do we have the video up already of Hire? Maybe that's a different
I think you do, actually.
I'm sorry,
but it's okay. No. It's literally, you know, 12 hours from now.
Well, it's there at the Life Changing Show. If you want to get a sneak peek, thank you for letting us do that. Oh my God.
You guys have the VIP pass, okay?
Oh, that is awesome. Well, we have run out of time, but we want to stretch it just another minute because I have to ask you. I mean, some of these things go down in history as part of history. We're gonna get to hear one more song, but Sesame Street, composer for Sesame Street for a long time. That's part of history on so many levels. Opening for Prince. Hello. No one's going to ever get to do that again. I mean, talk to us.
Well, the composing for Sesame Street came about when I had my first son and I was watching so much Sesame Street. And all the songs are so amazing. And I know the music director there and I texted him and said, you have to get me in on this. So it's been, I guess, 7 years that I've been composing songs and it's really fun. And then Prince was basically, I've had a really lucky experience being signed to Atlantic. I toured with Rob Thomas and Jewel and Train and all these amazing artists. And when I was on the road with Gavin DeGraw, we got a call that Prince offered me a show and he never had openers. He literally had four openers on this tour for the Musicology album. And long story short, we went and we flew, we left the tour, we went to Portland, Oregon. And he told me himself that he saw me perform my single at the time on Conan O'Brien's show. And just thought the chords I was playing were cool. He was so complimentary. And I have to say, I know, just like what Damian was saying, there's a lot of people in the entertainment industry that get a bad rap for whatever reason. But I have to say, he was nothing but cordial and he wanted to big brother me in a way that he had so much experience and knowledge to lend. And we sat and we ended up talking, my whole band and him. He hung out with us until 4 a.m. after the show.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was beyond. I mean, he liked my, you know, all my chords, and we talked about how my name was so cool because he was always so obsessed with names. I'm like, oh, you should tell my mom, she's the one that picked it. But you know, it was really, and we ended up playing pool until 4 a.m. It was wild. I don't even know how to sum up the experience, but that's as best as I could do.
Write a song about it.
Well, but I will say, just out to leave a moment, a higher moment, if you will, he is the one that told me to my face, you do not need this whole team. You don't need this producer. You don't need anyone. You can do it. He is the one that actually started this for me. And in the back of my mind, wow, since 2004, having that conversation with him, watching my soundtrack, watching my set, you know, being so complimentary and so amazingly, just gracious. And the time he spent giving me advice to navigate this crazy industry, he was the one that started the thought in my mind of, I don't need to use anyone. I can do it myself. And thankfully, he was that for me. And I hope that, you know, hopefully I can be that for somebody else.
Wow. Thank you, Prince. And thank you, Toby. And we're going to end with a song. Tell us real quickly about Somebody, Somebody.
It's called Somebody, Someone. And it's but it's the next single that's going to be released July 11th. And I start this song with a little bit of a mantra. And I just kept thinking to myself, what does somebody want to hear when they're in a tough spot? And ironically, I ended up writing a joyful song. And the joy in it is, I'm going to be somebody, I'm going to be someone, and I'm going to be somebody's someone. And so the whole song is basically just, when life gets you down, just keep thinking to yourself, manifest that positive energy, and the universe will show you it showed me to you guys, you know, tonight. And I just think that there's a reason why all these things are happening. And I'm just trying to keep that positive light going. And the song really, truly ends in joy. And so I would love for you to, if you can't play a lot, the whole thing on the show, at least to share it when you can.
We're going to play the whole thing on the show. But did I just get a sense that this is like world premiere? This is not even dropped yet?
No, it's not. July
oh, my
11th.
Goodness. Thank you so much. This is exciting.
I'm excited for you to play it.
Well, here is our performance guest, Toby Lightman, and her song, Somebody's Someone.
There you go.
Premiering here on the Life Changes Show, pre-recorded.
Said I am gonna be someone, said I am somebody someone, said I am gonna be someone, said I am somebody someone, said I am gonna be someone, said I am somebody someone, said I am gonna be someone, said I am somebody someone.
Oh, I always try to keep my body moving, keep on moving. Oh, I cover up my heart so I ain't losing, I ain't losing. Oh, I feel my energy is shifting in the wind. Oh, you win. Oh, I'm letting go to let my life begin. 'Cause now I know that I'm ready. Goodbye. 'Cause now
Billboard magazine said about Toby Lightman, her addictive sound combines with heartfelt lyrics to deliver a powerful message. Toby, thank you for your addictive sound, your heartfelt lyrics, and your powerful message here tonight on the Life Changes Show and in all in your songs that I've heard so far. You're amazing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad this worked out.
Such a pleasure. Worked out. It was perfect.
Totally.
Couldn't have been more perfect. And thank you
it's
for sharing.
It's way past my bedtime, but I'm so happy to be
yes,
here.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you for staying up with us. And what a pleasure it's been. All the best to you. Looking forward to learning more and sharing more of your music and your heart with our audience in the future.
Yes, I would love to. Thank you.
With a big thank you to Toby Lightman. I'm going to spell T-O-B-Y and then Lightman, L-I-G-H-T-M-A-N. And of course, TobyLightman.com. And she's on all the show's socials, as we talked about, Instagram, TikTok. We have those links at the Life Changer Show. You can also find them and her merch, actually, on the website. and the video is there. So go check out the video.
All
be the
things.
First. All the things. So again, with a big thank you to Toby Lightman and another big thank you to our interview guest, Damian Lichtenstein. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark LeJour, and our entire team at the Life Changes Show, and myself, Filippo Voltaggio, as your host, here to say, I'm going to get emotional because of the show. As your life changes, as ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com. On Facebook at The Life Changes Show and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.